and see how that all works out for us this year. But that gives you a sense of where we're at, and that concludes my report.
Any questions for Oscar?
One quick question. I'm a little bit of a data geek, so I was on your slide where you were talking about your admit rate. I was kind of doing the quick math there, and it looks like you have a 50%. Is that about a 50% admit rate?
It's a little bit under. Little bit under 50, but yes, you're
so
close.
And then you mentioned, because you kind of answered it, that part of that denial is because people don't complete the applications. Mm-hmm. So what's the percentage of the people that are denied that didn't complete the application versus an outright denial?
Ooh, I can't do that one off the top of my head, but if you give me a few minutes, I'll go on Slate and figure it out for you. Again, everything's transparent. It's there.
Yeah, just wondering, is that 30%, 20%, 40%, or is most people are denied because they didn't complete?
It's the vast majority, not just the majority. It's the vast majority of who we deny. So much so that I actually had to answer the question for IBHE, because they looked at the data this year, and they're like, wait a minute, we just noticed that your admit rate is lower than Urbana. What's going on
here?
So
what made me
share.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Do you follow up with the students or try to ping emails to say, please finish your app, et cetera?
Absolutely. That's part of the normal
business
process. And in fact, for students who are in fact denied in this sort of manner, there's actually communication that goes out to them asking them if they want to have their application switched to a future term.
Okay.
So even if a student is denied for, you know, they just didn't send us transcripts or whatever the case may be, right? We will pivot their application to next semester, hopefully get the transcript, and then work with them that way as well.
Interesting.
Yep.
So when we report, so if you go on the U.S. News World Report, all schools show their admittance rate. Are we showing the 50%? Is that?
We are in fact showing that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay.
We look far more selective.
Yes, that's
than
my
than
point.
Than we actually are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. I would hope that wouldn't deter people.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's an interesting phenomenon, because that could be a deterrent if we start falling in the selective or very selective, or because that is what high school counselors then tell their students to think about when applying, which could deter someone because they think they don't have a chance to get in. So
yeah, part of our work and this slide here, as we start talking about it, channels as we start looking at the channels that we're trying to move into this next year, part of the reason to move in that sort of direction is in fact to try and get to influencers and make sure that influencers are properly informed. I brought up Facebook, and one of those first things that people hear when they think Facebook is like, well, Facebook is dying. Well, I'm not going to Facebook for students. I'm going to Facebook for parents and counselors.
Yes.
Right? I'm trying to make sure that they have information, that they see us, that we're front of mind. We're hosting counselors on campus. We're having a big counselor event in, I think it's February, this coming up year. Again, bringing counselors to campus, trying to make sure that they're fully informed and are actually there. We've got a counselor brochure that we go out when we're visiting schools, that we make sure that they get it. It's got very clear what our admission information is. I mean, we're a pretty straightforward institution. You meet the admission thresholds, you're in. There's not a lot of movement there. There's not a lot of uncertainty there, right? You hit the thresholds, boom, you're in. So it's up to the team to try and get out in front of these audiences, make sure that they're hearing these things, so that is in fact taken off the table.
Perfect.
And the other piece on the back end, again, reducing applications, trying to increase completion rates and the whole bit, like all this should help manage that as well.
Yeah, that's really the point I was going to make, Oscar, is can we continue to highlight that for our admission rate for completed applications? I know that's not the official thing on the world, U.S. World News, but for us, there's no reason why we can't talk about it, right? You know, that our complete, if you complete your application, it's, you know, whatever, it's like got to be like 80% or something like that or higher. So whatever it is, it's higher than 50.
Absolutely, it is.
Yes.
Maybe we should find more ways to talk about that, particularly also with students who are not completing their application.
Yeah, right? there is some, this is not quite the question, but it will get to that challenge. There's a movement, and this will come to fruition in the state of Illinois. There's a movement toward a direct admissions pilot within the state of Illinois, and we are participating in that. We'll be one of the first institutions going there. So that will counter that a little tiny bit in that we're going to tell students that they're admissible before they even start thinking about, perhaps start thinking about us directly. So we'll be competing on the other end. We'll be competing on the facets of who we are as an institution, not necessarily on admissions.
Right. Yeah, and I think your outreach to counselors will definitely tamper that down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a parent who with a senior who's like deeply involved in this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of influence from counselors suggesting that kids put certain schools on their list based on that admittance rate is really, really high. So I think you're doing the right thing to get to counselors.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for Mr. Rodriguez?
I have a couple quick questions.
Yes, sir.
Just so as you think about enrollment going forward and some of the innovative strategies that you're trying to utilize to increase the enrollment, you mentioned, I want to say it was like 40%, and I'm not sure is that the 40% of folks that have applied are being admitted into the institution?
40, it's 43 is the number that was reported last year. The number is probably closer to 48 this year.
Okay. Has there been any research as to those who did not select Chicago State, why they didn't select CSU? Is it more favorable financial aid packages? Just to get a better understanding.
Sure. So there's a survey that was run with our intent to enroll form this year. So students who declined Chicago State, their first response was timing,
mm-hmm.
right? That we simply didn't get them a response quickly enough, right? Like. Mm-hmm. Other schools got to me first. Other schools got their financial aid or their scholarships notifications to me first, right? And we're trying to counter that. Obviously, you saw what some of the things that we're going to do this year. We're going to try and counter that. Second and third are always tend to be connected to cost or financial aid in some sense, right? Like students confuse those in their mind, but two and three is always related to money in some way, shape, or form. So again, trying to get ahead of some of those messages. We're working on some. I shouldn't say that. That's not. That implies something different. I will say that there was conversation already in the last week and a half about trying to get to some of our data to reframe how it is that we provide aid to students, because we provide significant amounts of aid. We aid students relatively well, not even relatively well, incredibly well, given the circumstances that we're in the state of Illinois. And we need to figure out a way to brand that and market that in a different sort of way. So we're looking.
Got it.
Yep.
Second question is, I know that, and I love to hear about, especially from a pipeline building perspective, relationships that you guys are fostering with CPS as well as City Colleges. You hear a lot about CPS, but I think also an untapped market, well, I won't say untapped, but maybe not tapped as well as it could, is relationships with some of the suburban school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess as you think about enrollment strategy, how do you feel about building up some of those partnerships?
The South suburbs are incredibly important to Chicago State. Obviously because we're in Chicago, because Chicago's the big city, the attention is paid there. And the school districts south of the city are a little bit more challenging in some ways because they're one-to-ones or two-to-ones in sort of communities, mm-hmm. right? But I assure you that they are not left behind. I should probably share that with the board at some point, like what the territories look like and who we actually visit and who we make a point of making sure that we step in the building, because we can't get into every building across the country nor in the state of Illinois, but we do get into Chicago and we do get into the south suburbs.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'd love to see that as well, and I'd encourage you to think about the western suburbs as well, Bolingbrook, mm-hmm. Plainfield, et cetera, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of students out there that I think would be interested in Chicago State.
Yeah, we engage in a lot of dialogue throughout the year about what we're seeing and how the pool is building or not building, what we're hearing as we are communicating with students and families. Part of our challenge, and we're already having conversations about how to address this, is that there are a fair amount of students. We're a commuter campus for the most part, right? Like that's the reality of who we are. And Dean Cameron highlighted it when he said we had roughly 250 to 300 students in the residence halls. And part of what we continue to hear is that if you had housing, if you had more housing,
that's
you'd
fair.
Get a different kind of student to actually come to campus. And that's fair in a lot of our communities, right? Where they don't want to go too far, but they don't want to stay at home, they don't want to stay in their communities. And as someone who comes from one of those communities, I absolutely understand that. So we're having some conversations about how to address that here and what's a reasonable sort of goal for the institution. And in addition, what that does is, it shouldn't be lost on anyone that if we've got this organic interest that's coming when people are visiting Chicago to visit other schools, you're going to make sure that they stop at Chicago State. Well, those are undergraduate students for the most part, future undergrads. It's we simply don't have the housing stock for students in mass from the Carolinas or Utah or Ohio to come here at the moment, right? So we can work out relationships in the community, but again, is that fair to undergraduates? Graduate students are different sort of things. I assure you, if we had capacity in nursing, we had housing, I would be in California right now. I'd get the budget for California. They need nurses, and they will send them to us, I assure you.
Hmm. Oscar, do we track the number of undergraduate students who are student parents and like their persistence and completion? Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a big national conversation right now. And
yes. We do, but it doesn't happen at the point of admissions.
Okay.
Right. So in admissions, we're capturing a lot of the basic demographic data that you would imagine, and then we ask a question about whether you want to be a full-time or a part-time student. Mm-hmm. But that gets a little, perhaps, too personal for students at that stage.
I mean, we have 22% of our students are student parents, based on our data, our latest data. And some of that, I think Erin is right that some of that we get from IBHE or is it our own data?
Yeah, in the roughly 2 years that I've been here, we've been getting much better about asking the questions about who and what, and then how we actually respond to what it is that we're learning. Right, it's far more data driven than it's been in the past. Now we need to work on codifying it a bit more across the institution over everything that we do. But again, what you're seeing is response to the information that you're getting, the data that you're gathering, and trying to capitalize on what you've learned.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. This is great. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay. Next up is legal affairs, and I call on our new general counsel, Sonia Miller. Welcome, and Chief Compliance Officer and VP of Legal Affairs. Sonia Miller, who is joining us for her first board meeting, welcome.
Thank you.
And please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zott, members of the board, President Scott. What we are presenting to you today is a proposed amendment to the board regulations. I understand from past history that there was a significant edit to the board regs, specifically with respect to delegation of the authority of the president. Section G, we're proposing to put back Section 2, which enumerates specific contracts and business operations that the president has authority to authorize or delegate as appropriate. Specifically with respect to grants, we never want to be in a position where we're sending money back. So, specifically, subsection 4 speaks to grants and contracts and the authority that is there and invested in the president. So, that is a proposal to amend the board regs as stated in the board packet.
Okay, any questions for General Counsel Miller? We're all get it and get that it's going to make things more efficient. We love efficiency.
Yes.
So can I get a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Ms. Bates, can you call the roll, please?
Yes. Trustee Bolden?
Yes.
Trustee David?
Yes.
Trustee Chiara?
Yes.
Trustee Timms?
Yes.
Trustee Watkins? Oh, she's absent. Chair Zott?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Right. With that, we're moving to the Chicago State Foundation. The executive director of the Chicago State Foundation, Nellie Silas, should be skipping to the table as she has some very good news for the board.
Yes. Skip, skip, skip.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The clicker is right there.
Oh, got it.
So the foundation ended FY24 in a really strong position. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about the various areas in the pictures, making me more nervous. I'll start with talking about the corporate and foundation area. So we fell just shy of our goal. The way that we reached that goal is 1.25 million of that should come from foundations, and 750,000 of it should come from corporations. And so while we had a really strong year when it comes to foundations, we actually overperformed in that area. We underperformed when it comes to corporate giving. We raised about 500,000. So it wasn't quite enough to reach our whole 2 million, but our board has spent a lot of time talking about how we can do better to increase our corporate giving. One of the things we've spent a lot of time talking about is the foundation's board level of comfort with telling the story of CSU and everything that we're up to. So for this fiscal year, at each of our board meetings, we are bringing in various units similar to how this board meeting is set up so that the foundation board members can get more familiar with various areas of the campus and not just the scholarship programs that we typically fundraise for. So Dr. Carroll presented at our first meeting, and they were really excited about it, and I'm looking forward to continue conversation with athletics, which is something that is new for the foundation board. The other thing the chair of the board and I have talked about is training for our board members so that they feel more comfortable with fundraising, and so we'll also be doing some training for the foundation staff as well. I'll go to the alumni and individual giving area next. We had a really good year when it comes to the alumni and individual giving. I think a couple reasons for that is all of the prep work that we were doing to take over the Alumni Association work. Mm-hmm. We did more engagement activities with individuals and alumni than we had in the past, and so I think that played a good role. We also had a challenge gift for the gala, and so we were able to also promote that challenge for our year in giving, so we had a really strong year in appeal last year as well. Major gifts did well. I will say though, part of that number comes from closing a major gift that the conversations were started for that in FY20. And so while we did have a strong year with major gifts, and having a major gifts officer for the first time in a few years was helpful, I kept the number flat when it comes to our individual and major giving goal for FY25. And then probably my favorite thing to talk about is the gala. We overperformed with the gala, so that helped with some of our shortfall with corporate and foundation giving as well. The challenge gift that I mentioned before, I think, played a big role in how well the gala did, also starting earlier with the fundraising and the board engagement. I'll talk about it a little bit later, but the contributions of the board when it comes to give get were significantly higher in FY24 than FY23, so I wouldn't have been able to do this work without them. So our fifth annual gala is coming up on September the 27th. We are actually at 437,500 since I did my slide, so really excited about that. My hope is that I'll be at 500 heading into the dinner. Which is not impossible, because in just the last 2 days, I sold 3 more tables. So every time I try to project the number of where we're going to land, I get a new surprise. So hopefully some more of that happens this week.
You should have been backflipping up to this.
I should have been. Yeah. And I think, again, some of those same things, starting early with securing the table sponsorships. Also, President Scott and I met with the honorary chairs this year, and all of them have made a gift personally to the dinner, so that plays a big role in where we are financially with the dinner as well. And our awardees have also, not all of them yet, but they have, some of our awardees have also made generous contributions to the dinner as well. So I think that we have a really exciting evening planned, and that the event just continues to get better and better each year. And we have some new things planned. This year is presented by United Airlines, and so in addition to the paddle raise that you can normally experience, we're also going to be auctioning a trip that will include United Airlines tickets. And so we're hoping that that will also assist with increasing and helping us to do well in the room when it comes to night of fundraising. So my stretch goal for the event is 600,000, and I feel like it's in eyesight with the momentum that we have so far. So when it comes to corporate and foundation giving, in Q4, we had a few big ones come in. We received $100,000 from Rivers Gives for Rise Academy. We also received a $60K gift from Jacobs Solutions. It's an engineering firm. It's a two-year grant for the PrEP program. And then from an anonymous family foundation, we received $1 million. They have donated to us before in 2020, and have come back and made another gift to us. With that gift, we'll be upgrading 4 classrooms. And then they are also contributing 100,000 of that to an endowment that they started with the foundation called the Cougar Futures Fund. Mm-hmm. And the proceeds of that endowment fund the Rise Academy scholarships. And so a lot of the pending pipeline has actually already started to come in the current year. We received $200,000 from the Chicago Community Trust to continue our 95th Street redevelopment work. And there's an error on there. We actually received $150,000 also from the Chicago Community Trust for the RISE program. So really excited to have 2 awards from Chicago Community Trust and the increased giving. We also have a pending request out to the Joyce Foundation to support our PBI advocacy work. We initially submitted for $100,000 for 1 year, and then they come back and asked if we could increase it to 200 for 2 years. And so that's great that they want to do a multi-year commitment to that work, and we expect to hear about that soon. We also have a pending 2-year commitment from the Circle of Service Foundation, $300,000 to support the RISE Academy program. And then we have 2 other smaller proposals that are out there, one to Dr. Scholl Foundation for PrEP, and then also the Jack and Jill Foundation for PrEP. We're also in conversations with a few other foundations, the AKA Educational Foundation. We're working with them to try to get a renewal for the PrEP program. We're also planning to revisit our discussions with Google. They have mentioned an interest in RISE Academy, so we're working to see what the interest will be with them for this year. And then Lumina Foundation was on our campus and continues discussions with us. They're interested in supporting the PBI advocacy work, and then we have pending conversations around them supporting some area of our student success strategy. And then we also have we just finished follow-up, so I would say the discussion's already been had, but also in process, is our renewal of GenOps support from the Mayor and Morris Kaplan Foundation. We've also, there's 2 meetings that have actually occurred now since I set this up, but Shriver Philanthropy came, cold called me, which doesn't happen very often, but they are currently working on building out their 3-year educational plan strategy, and so they wanted to come to Chicago State, and we planned a visit for them, and we were able to meet with their president as well as the person who leads their education portfolio. I've had some follow-up with them since the visit, and they're interested in supporting the Child Care Center and potentially some area of Cougar commitment as well. So those conversations are in progress. And then Schneider National, is a firm that has participated in our career fairs, but they're interested in offering scholarships for our students. So we're currently working with them now to build out what that could look like and how they can deepen their engagement with us, because they're interested in spreading the awareness to students that it's more than just construction that they are involved in, or and not just construction, driving trucks, that there's all areas of their business that they can support our students and help people with careers. And so those are just two developing partnerships that I wanted to highlight. And as I mentioned before, we continue to have a really engaged board of directors. In terms of their total get, they've given more, 191K more than they did in the previous year. And so I just couldn't be more grateful for the support that they've given the board. A lot of that, I would say, has come from helping to grow the dinner. But I'm glad that there's interest in knowing more about what we do and finding other ways that they can support us. And I think some of the strategies that I talked about earlier will help them to do that. And so I think it's only up from here as the board gets engaged in the work that we're trying to do. And that's it. Any questions I can answer?
Congrats.
It's an exciting update.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Lots of hard work.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. And I hope everyone here will be at the gala if you can. All right, that gets us to executive session. All right. So I will now move to convene the board into executive session to discuss litigation, real estate, and employment matters. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Bates, please call the roll.
Yes. Trustee Bolden.
Yes.
Trustee David.
Yes.
Trustee Chiara.
Yes.
Trustee Timms.
Yes.
Chair Zopp.
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right. We will reconvene at the close of executive session for our retreat reports.